I'm about to feed him to the sharks right now.
Get him hyped right now.
Yeah. You know the ground is up. Yeah. Everybody that trains, you know the game. Yeah. So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll.
Hey.
Yeah, that's the way that it goes.
All right.
Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth.
That's
time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know. But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.
Welcome to episode 7 of the BJJ Campaign Podcast. My name is Jeff Boone. I'm an A3, blue belt, one stripe.
And this is Phil Kors, A2, white belt, four stripes.
And now, AJ.
I was like, which one? I'm AJ Clingerman. I'm a W2, purple belt, no stripes. Oh,
we've never had W. What's W? I'm not one.
Women's.
Two?
Yep.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. All right, I like it.
Or an F.
Yeah. So
depending on the gi size or a gi brand.
Yeah, the gi companies, it's either an F or a W, but I'm a W.
Gotcha. James?
James Clingerman, gi size first. A2, sometimes A3, depending on the brand. Origin, definitely an A2.
Oh, shit.
Black belt, third degree.
Very good. Guys, thanks for coming on the program with us. We appreciate it. Just for the audience, we got to spend a lot of time, me and Phil got to spend a lot of time at the Origin Immersion Jiu-Jitsu Camp with both James and AJ. In the kind of the midday when everybody was switching from camp one to camp two, they do two separate camps of 4 days each. There wasn't really a set up instruction day. And I think James and AJ were so kind to offer their time, and we trained from like, I don't know, like 8 to midnight that day. It was great. And there was like 10 or 15 of us. It was a fantastic training. So thanks for that, guys. And that's why we really wanted to have you on the program. And I want to start out by just kind of noting a post that AJ put on Facebook about 6 weeks ago. It was about barriers to being new to jiu-jitsu and why people don't train, right? And I want to specifically delve into, because we are lucky enough to have a woman. By the way, folks, AJ is the women's IBJJF world purple belt champion.
No gi.
There you go. Thank you for that. But while we have you on here, you know, there are several women, you know, in and around our academy. And I know you guys have a very successful women's program there. I see the pictures you posting with your women's only classes, something you must be very proud of. What I'd like to kind of talk about is if there is a woman who's thinking about getting in jiu-jitsu, what is some advice that you can give her?
Yeah, definitely check out the academy. You know, hopefully they offer a free trial of some sort that they can go in and try it out. A lot of places still don't have a women's only class. So that's not a necessity. One thing I say is when they start training, and you know, I know different schools have different rules, but I tell my women, if they're in a co-ed class, to start rolling with, colored belts or other females, not to grab the white belts. You know, sometimes when white belt guys first come in, they still have a lot of ego. They don't have good control of their body. So they don't know how much strength they're using versus technique. So, you know, it's safer to start in training with the colored belts. And then they can always say no. Like at our school, if they don't want to roll with somebody, then, you know, whatever reason they need to say, you know, no, I'm going to sit this one out, or I need to use the restroom, or I'm already rolling with someone else. Those are all good, like, safety tips, but that's kind of once you get into jiu-jitsu a little bit. Starting out, it can be very scary. Just, you know, like, it's so different. It's not something that we're kind of told as women to be delicate flowers. But to try it. Yeah. But you know, like to get out there and do it. Like the amount of confidence that you get from jiu-jitsu is second to none. Like I no longer think about what my body looks like as much as what it can do. And I tell a lot of women, like, from a self-defense standpoint, jiu-jitsu is the best form of self-defense for a woman. Like, either they're going to take my purse and run, or it's a sexual assault. And from my back, with somebody between my legs, I can break someone's arm. I can choke them unconscious. I can flip them over. You know, there's a lot I can do. So I say, they think they're the attacker. I know I am at that point, you know? Yeah. So that's what gets women in, is that, you know, self-defense aspect a lot of times.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. It is a great aspect to having that confidence to defend yourself in nearly any situation that you encounter of an unarmed attacker, or even armed sometimes with the self-defense techniques that are taught. But I want to delve into, because you said something that I thought was very interesting, and I went through the same thing. You know, I had body issues with myself whenever I started jiu-jitsu. I've noted I was 111 pounds heavier, and you know, it's funny because whenever people say, "Oh, you look great," I don't see that, because I don't really see the negative body image anymore because of the self-confidence in other areas. You know,
right.
Yes, yeah, I am physically healthier, but it's more of an overall change, both physical and mental. Of anything that it is physical. So I'd like to delve into that a little bit more on, do you see that with some of the women that start training and continue to train with you too?
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird how that changes. You know, like, I have a woman that's starting tomorrow and she's like, "I'm really self-conscious at, you know, like, I'm worried about just being on the mat and, you know, like my gi coming up a little or something, you know, like, but here in 6 months, I know she won't even think about it. You know, like, I know that you stop being so self-conscious about body image."
I thought it was interesting. We run the Extreme Grappling Open, the Ego, and we had our 51st event on Saturday. So a couple of days ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
But I noticed, like, while the matches were going on, when women's gis would come up or their rash guards would come up, all the refs would take the time to pull their rash guard down and straighten the rash guard. And, like, I was like, man, they don't do that for the guys. Nobody's ever straightened my rash guard for me.
Because you're not allowed to wear, I guess, a no-gi. But, I mean, that's because for other people, they still have that, like, "Oh my gosh, I need to protect them" kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the women fighting are just like, "I'm fighting. Like, this is just a match. I'm not worried about things happening as much. You know, like, whatever, my stomach's showing a little, doesn't matter. I'm still choking this girl."
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I can say it from, you know, we have probably in our academy that Phil and I train in, we have probably 6 to 10, anywhere from 6 to 10 women that train with us. And, you know, they're training partners, just like everybody else. It's thought of it in that way. And I think that's kind of what I want to get across to the women who are thinking about training, who are maybe self-conscious about anything with regards to training, to come out and be a better person for it.
Yeah. And, you know, male or female, a lot of people say, "Well, I need to lose weight, or I need to get in shape to do jiu-jitsu." And, like, I have a girl that started with me April 1st, and she's lost over 30 pounds and gained a ton of muscle. Like, if you look at the pictures of her from, she competed, her goal was, she started April 1st. She wanted to compete at the end of April. Like, she just wanted, like, immersion for a month. Yeah. And she actually won the no-gi of that tournament.
That's awesome.
Like, you look at the pictures from that tournament versus the pictures from her competing this last Saturday, and her body's completely different. So, you know, on one hand, you know, you don't want to care as much, but on the other hand, you're like, man, I just dropped, you know, like, I was self-conscious. Now I'm not, because I know what my body can do, but also I just dropped 30 pounds doing jiu-jitsu, doing nothing but jiu-jitsu, really.
Well, and we brought this up, Phil and I brought this up before as well, is whenever you get into jiu-jitsu, you know, you want your cardio to come up. You want your everything, your physical abilities to come up for jiu-jitsu so that you can learn. So it therefore makes you more conscious of what you're eating, of your nutrition, right? I mean, so that's kind of a side effect of really that immersion into jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. That's a big reason I tell people to compete. You know, I always say, no matter why you got into jiu-jitsu, competing makes you better. So like if you got into it for self-defense, nobody's going to be attacking you in class like they would be in a tournament. If you got into it for health reasons, like, you know, you're going to eat better, you're going to train harder, you're going to do more recovery type stuff. You know, there's a very, you know, no matter what reason you got into it for jiu-jitsu, even if you just got into it for the camaraderie, you know, the friends you make at tournaments, we're lifelong friends with people that we just met at a tournament 20 years ago.
So. Yeah. That's funny. We just actually saw somebody, we were at the Naga in Charlotte last Saturday, and me and Jeff both are looking at this one guy, and I'm like, I know that guy from somewhere. I couldn't figure it out. And it wasn't until he put his, or I saw him in just his rash guard, and it was the Origin one. I was like, you were at the Origin.
Yeah.
You know, put it together. Nice. So, somebody from there, and it's like, yeah, it's hilarious.
It's awesome.
So for James, you noted at the camp that you were like kind of had a issue with public speaking, which if you didn't say it, nobody would know, right? Like when you're teaching the class and stuff, there's no way somebody would be like, this guy's shy about anything. But
good.
how has jiu-jitsu kind of helped with that, do you think?
I mean, all the obvious ways, right? Like I still hate public speaking. I don't like being around people at all. I'm super nervous right now on this podcast. No, you know, like just getting out there. Number one, if you can go out and compete and, you know, fight another person in front of all these people. And it's not like a team sport where you're just one of, you know, you're kind of one wheel in the cog. Like when everyone is looking at you and only you, like that takes a lot of guts, I guess, but you know, it kind of smooths over any other like public, public thing you could be doing. But you know, just getting out there and teaching, and it's like teaching to a room full of two people, and then 10 people, and then 30 people, and then 100 people. You know, like what did we have at camp? Like there was like 330 people throughout the week, and right. It's just ridiculous, you know. But yeah, it's just putting myself out there and doing it, and I'm comfortable in jiu-jitsu, right? Like overall, I'm comfortable teaching. So I you know. We do some marketing stuff, and I teach a couple of marketing classes and things like that. So I think just getting out and teaching, I'm fairly comfortable with. I still don't like public speaking. I still, you know, don't like all eyes on me by any means. It's just, I guess I just really learned to deal with it. And you know, most of that, if not all of that came from jiu-jitsu.
That kind of blows my mind too, because I mean, you've got videos up on BJJ Fanatics, you know, more and more every time you look at your audience there. I mean, it's way bigger than that 330 people at the Origin Immersion Jiu-Jitsu camp.
Right.
So
when I got to go work with, you know, Bernardo Faria because of that, like he invited me out like to teach stuff at his academy and, you know, what? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to put you in a twister. Yes, sir.
Voice as well, because yeah, I love watching his instructionals because he's so excited about everything jiu-jitsu.
Oh yeah.
Even more excited.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, as you're teaching it, like his format's really good. If you watch enough of his videos with other instructors, he'll have them show it twice. And then the third time he'll talk and tell you how the other person's doing it and how it makes him feel. And, you know, it really kind of shows like, yeah, I'm the expert, but this guy's also an expert because I'm saying he's an expert.
Yeah.
So, but it's very cool. And he's very excited about jiu-jitsu, like sitting down talking with him. We actually almost didn't get the film because we were just chatting about marketing and like all this other stuff beforehand. I was like, guys, we have to film. Like we're gonna
run out of time.
Super, super cool guy. And it was nice to talk to him, and like that guy loves jiu-jitsu, you know, like he legitimately loves jiu-jitsu.
You can really tell. And I want to kind of go back to When did you, I know you say and feel that you're still uncomfortable with that, but when did you think, at what part of your BJJ campaign did you feel like you were confident and competent to teach? You know, when was that? How did, and I'm saying it for me, you know, Phil and I help coach the kids class, and you know, we do some teaching, and on Sunday in our Sunday roles, we do some teaching there. We go over the blue belt list, which is also the purple belt list, and right, and do some of that. And that's it's not uncomfortable for me because I love public speaking. It's something that I enjoy doing. It's something that I do for work. I've never been one of those people who's been afraid to get up in front of a crowd. But I know that that's really the number one thing that people have the most fear of is public speaking. So just getting back to the, when did you feel confident and competent in your teaching skills?
It's a good question. Thinking about it, I've got kind of two answers. AJ's laughing, so I think I know what she's thinking about. So number one, let me say, it's not just public speaking. Like I would probably honestly be diagnosed with like social anxiety disorder. Like I don't like going to the movies. I don't like going to the mall. I don't like being around people at all. Like it's pretty bad. And you know, I've gotten way better over the years, but you know, even as a little kid, they're just like, oh, he's shy. He's a shy kid. I'm like, no, like I would rather go like jump off a cliff right now than talk to this person. sometimes it's still like that. I started martial arts in karate, and part of each like belt promotion, I guess, was actually being able to teach like the katas and stuff, right? Yes. So that was the worst part. I always hated it. Stupid. I didn't want to teach anybody. Like, why would I ever want to teach somebody stuff? And then, you know, like as I got older, like I would show my friends things and, you know, just backyard karate, jujitsu fighting. But then I started doing judo and this we'll call it jujitsu because that's what they called it, but it was not. I call it fake jujitsu. I started with this academy and I was just kind of better than everybody else. Like even the high rank guys, and I don't say it like in a cocky manner, like I had some of the Gracie fundamental tapes. I had watched UFC 2, you know, so I was definitely an expert.
Right.
You know, so I went in and I was beating their higher ranking guys being this like 16-year-old kid. And, you know, I thought I was awesome. I didn't realize that they were just not awesome. So right away, like as I was there, I started like the instructor started going, hey, here's a key. Like, I need you to teach. So I would, anytime I had to teach, I would teach stuff off, like I would teach Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, like stuff I learned on videotapes and stuff like that. So it kind of got me into that mode of teaching where basically it was just like, I know something you don't know, so I have to share the wealth. Right. So that kind of started that. And then, you know, once I met a guy named Greg Eldred, he was a blue belt under Horse and Horion, and, started training under, you know, their affiliation in 97. Met two purple belts, Scott and Eric Sullivan, and started training with them in 99. And so I ended up switching teams. I was under a guy named Mario Roberto and trained with Scott and Eric constantly. And then like one day AJ just ran into a random Taekwondo school and was like, hey, how would you like a jiu-jitsu program? So she made me do it. As most things go, she made me do it.
So yeah. Good for you, taking out of this comfort zone, AJ. So yeah. You had your own school when you were a purple belt.
I was a blue belt.
You're a blue belt. And that was 99?
Yeah, so we technically started in 2000, yeah.
Wow. It's incredible. I mean, blue belts were few and far between back in 2000, I would say, right?
Yeah, so, you know, telling the story of the Scott and Eric, they were purples, and I had, outside of California at that time, I had only met one other purple belt ever.
Wow.
So it was my, I was like, there's no way these guys are fake. And then, you know, go over there and they thrashed us and we're like, and then they showed us a whole bunch of cool stuff. I was like, okay, yeah, they're probably purple belts.
So AJ, did you start training in 2000 as well? Or when did you start training? What prompted
you? Yeah, that's a tough question. So, I mean, I trained a little in like 99 when they met Scott and Eric, in their garage, you know. I trained a little, you know, just dabbled here. I trained a lot in 2004. But you know, we didn't really know how to run a business. So even though the school seemed successful from the outside, we didn't know anything about what we were doing. So I worked multiple jobs basically to keep the school open, keep a roof over our head, that kind of stuff. So I didn't train for a very long time. Just, you know, to keep the school going. So really I probably more actively like came back about 2009 and started, but 2011 would be when I really started training for myself more.
Yeah.
You were never passionate about jiu-jitsu either.
I wasn't.
It was something I did and we kind of shared here and there, but
yeah. But it now I'm probably more obsessed, but
so that's actually a really good transition because I felt like immediately I was obsessed with it. Like, you know, I immediately went out, I did it, and there was, you know, I was 325 pounds in there, and somebody that was 180 pounds was just, you know, submitting me easily. And I immediately was like, I've got to know how to do that, and became obsessed. And that's kind of my personality anyway. What was the trigger? And Phil's kind of the same way.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah, Phil? Addictive personalities. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know how many cups of coffee he's had this morning, but he's addicted to coffee.
It's just a number.
but what was that? What was that trigger for you? Because you say, you know, you trained on and off kind of here. You, life got busy. You had to think about personal relationship and also financial goals. What was your trigger that kind of made you go into that obsession?
I'm not even sure. Like when I, to begin with, doing jiu-jitsu was more about there was another woman on the mat and she needed a partner. And that's what would get me on the mat. I mean, like for, you know, the first dozen years, I don't know what really changed. Something just started to kind of click. I don't know. And that's tough because like when I, you know, when people come in and they're like, I'm not sure about this. I'm like, well, I wasn't sure about it for, you know, a decade. Keep doing it. You'll love it eventually.
That's a hard sell right there. That's a real hard sell.
You know, like my best friend, when she started jiu-jitsu, she started because she wanted to spend more time with me. And it did take her a solid 6 months before she really started to, you know, get into it. But now she's obsessed. She loves jiu-jitsu. She would do it every day. And sometimes it's the part that in the beginning that keeps you going is the community, you know, like it's the relationships you build so quickly and that's what keeps you going. And then eventually you're like, oh my God, I love this. Some people walk in and love it immediately. Like you said, like you, something happened and you were like, oh my God, I want to learn that. Where sometimes it's the flip. Like you're like, oh, that's terrifying. I don't know. I don't know if that's, you know, for me. And then you just keep at it and you're like, oh my God, this is for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So Phil, why don't you talk about one of the reasons that you wanted to get started in jiu-jitsu competition wise?
Yeah. I like the, not necessarily get started. I was getting started was more for like a way to exercise, but realizing there was competitions and stuff immediately. That's always been my nature, is like competitive and whatnot. So I was really interested in that. And I noticed at the Origin Camp too, after, you know, finding out you won Nogi Worlds, I thought it was interesting that you're the one asking questions about, you know, being nervous before competitions and mindset and all that stuff. Like that really stood out to me because, you know, it's the stuff you think about, but you kind of just, like you're nervous going in just like everybody else, but you try to just put it out of your mind, you know, and not think about it. Yeah. So I thought it was really cool. Come from somebody who had some success to ask those like mindset related questions. I thought that was awesome.
Thank you. That's, you know, like I compete as much as possible. I'm probably the second most active competitor on our team. Like I compete every chance I get. but I still have nerve issues. Like I still just in March, competing, I had a full blown panic attack in between matches. And usually after the first one, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, for the second, but in between matches, I had a complete panic attack. So it still is definitely, but to me, that's part of it. Like I believe that jiu-jitsu and martial arts is about constantly bettering yourself. So that's a big reason why I compete, is because if I can't get my nerves under control for competition, how would I do it if I'm attacked in the streets, you know? And just in the last year, I mean, aside from that March bad issue, I mean, you know, it's always a struggle, but, I feel like I'm starting to break through and get better about, you know, how to handle those nerves leading up to competition.
What was the trigger behind the panic attack between matches? What kind of brought that on? Because like you said, usually once you have a match, you're like, oh, well, whatever, it's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Two things. One really was an underlying, but that division was me and two of my good friends. You know, the female community is pretty small and I'm pretty active, especially in the Midwest. So I run a lot of women's camps and women's open mats and stuff like that. So I become good friends with a lot of girls, and then fighting them is often hard for me. So that's always been a struggle. Two, we were kind of having a stalker issue that really came to a head the week before. So I think that I was already pretty high emotionally going into it. So I think that had quite a bit to do with it as well.
Oh, wow.
Jiu-jitsu stalkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, both of you guys might have mistaken me and Phil for stalkers because
no, yeah. I'm still expecting a Mother's Day card come May.
So. You're going to get better than that come Christmas time. That's but anyway, right. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, we actually did, folks who are listening on the podcast. We asked them to adopt us. We just because we love James, we love your teaching style. AJ, your entries into the loop choke, which now Phil is obsessed with.
It's my favorite.
And I constantly have to hide my head from him. it was really good. And so we really enjoyed that. So I want to kind of get to James. James, you've done a lot of competition in your life as well. I know it's probably been a long time since you had your first competition, but you know, our audience consists of just like the demographic in jiu-jitsu, right? Mostly white belts, right? People who are just starting in jiu-jitsu. What kind of advice can you give someone who maybe is a bit agoraphobic like yourself, or a bit nervous around other people and possibly even nervous about competition itself? What advice can you give them?
A lot. So let me talk about my very first tournament, if that'll help. So, this is 1997. So my first two tournaments, number one, I drove 6 hours to, and then the second one I flew to California because there was just nothing. Right. So this was in the first like 3 to 4 months, like I long drive and plane flight just to compete. So my first tournament ever, me and my two training partners, the two main guys I worked out with all the time, you know, we worked out on the mat, during class times, we'd get together on the weekends, on the off nights, everything, like 6 days, 7 days a week, we'd train. So the three of us drive up to this tournament and we get there and it's this real, not a very big building. It's pretty small. So we walk in. And there's one little tiny, like tiny jiu-jitsu mat. And
like the changing. Fold-out blue mats that people are rolling.
Basically, right? And there's walls on all – there's like a doorway and there's walls on all four sides. And I was like, wow, this mat space is way smaller than the small building we're in. So I was like, well, there's got to be more to it. So, you know, we were changing. He's like, hey, there's no changing room. Just change. I'm like, oh, okay. So I said, well – is there a restroom? Like, you know, gotta go to the bathroom. So he's like, yeah, go around the corner and just walk all the way down. So I walk around the corner and I realize we're in the middle of a gun range. I'm assuming it was not active, but it was an indoor gun range, and these people had built a small room in the middle of it. I don't know why the room was so small. It's really weird. Like, I can't even explain how weird it was. But anyway, so I walk down range, and at the end, you know, in the direction you're shooting, there's a restroom. But yeah, so that was my first tournament. And then come to find out, no one else showed up for this tournament outside of me and my two friends and 9 guys from the hosting academy. That's it. So the guy ran Chet Schimmelhorn. He's a Horion Gracie black belt now. So Chet's like, all right, guys, we're going to do a 12-man double elimination open. And don't worry about paying registration fee because I didn't get any medals. So it was just this open match. So what sucked was I ended up getting second. I lost to, I believe it was actually Chet's cousin, Jason, who is a blue belt. But I lost to him twice. And I ended up tapping out both of my friends that I drove there with. So it was a long ride home. And also, like, I was a young kid. Like, that was the first time I'd even ever driven on the interstate. Right? So I remember we get in the car and my buddy's like, just take this until we get to whatever and then wake me up. And then he goes to sleep. So like 4 hours later, I'm like, I think we're near. This is before cell phones or GPS or any of that stuff. I've got like a map out. Like, I'm trying to find my way home via this paper map.
Yeah, I should say that Chess Place isn't 6 hours away, but it was for them.
you didn't have to mention that.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. Honestly, it's probably a 2-hour drive now.
It's like 3.5, maybe.
But yeah, so that was my first, and I remember, like, you know, it was like, yeah, guys, you can use the walls, whatever. I remember like bouncing guys off the walls and slamming them. Like, it was just horrible.
And I'm sure that the disparity in weight was also something that was probably large in that. Who was the heaviest and who was the lightest?
Yeah, so honestly, I don't remember. There was probably a guy a little smaller than me. So I was weighing about 165 at the time, which I'm about 170, 175 right now. So I haven't grown much. Yeah, I mean, I think the guy that won the whole thing was probably a good 220, pretty muscular. So
yeah,
not a giant.
So it wasn't a 300-pounder in there.
No,
that's good.
No, there may have been somebody bigger than him. I honestly, I don't remember all 12, but I remember my 3 matches. So 5 matches, I guess.
Nice. So yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's stressful going against your own teammates. We don't really see that much anymore today in academies. So what would your advice be to that person who's competing for the first time, either in preparation or in execution?
Yeah, for sure. So I tell every single one of my guys, whether they're a kid, whether they're an adult, there's only 2 things you can do when you go compete. Number one, do your best. Outside of doing your best, you cannot control the outcome, right? So I'm never outcome based. I don't worry if I win or I lose. If I lose, then I know there's things I need to work on, right? But if I've gone out and done my best and somebody beats me, they were better than me. So mm-hmm. Do my best. And then the second, have fun. Like, tournaments are fun, ultimately, win or lose. Like, you should be having fun at a tournament. Sorry, got a little pop up from you guys.
Yeah. For technical difficulty, we got a free version of this Zoom software, and we were within 3 minutes of ending the meeting, and Phil was deft enough to go over and put the credit card information in and extend the meeting so that we will not have technical difficulties. Be caught up. That's what the pop up.
So yeah, just do your best and have fun, right? So and I'll give it took me a long time to really learn that, right? So you know, we talk about like social anxiety and stuff, and there was a period after I got my black belt, like I'd competed for years, and I, you know, you've always have nerves are always a part of it, But at some point, oh, I remember what the point was. I almost died on an airplane. So, but after that, I started having like legit panic attacks, and they would come out of nowhere. Like, I mean, horrible. So after that time, I was having a really hard time competing, cause it's like super high anxiety, super high stress. And I remember I was at Master Worlds, I think the second year they did it here. And like, I was just kind of freaking out. I was like, I can't get this under control. And so I just kind of stopped, and I remember being in the bullpen, and I was one of the, I was the first match of the day. Right. So like standing ringside when they bow the referees in. And, you know, I just remember like looking around, and there's like 600 black belts there, like probably not even exaggerating, you know, and I'm looking around, and I was like, holy smokes. Like, I am here not watching these guys compete. I'm here competing on the same stage with these guys, against these guys. Like, some of these guys are my heroes, you know what I mean? And it was just, it was kind of surreal, but I just remember looking around and seeing all the spectators and just kind of taking it in and just kind of feeling, you know, very grateful. I was very fortunate, you know, it's a great place to be. Like, I'm competing, I'm out in California, just competing with all these guys, like at the world championships. And that was just awesome. And I remember like walking over the, you know, ring coordinator number one takes us over, and I'm sitting there kind of stretching out, warming up. And I just started smiling. I just kind of forced myself to smile. And then after forcing myself, it was a legit smile. You know, I was happy. I felt great. And I remember one of the guys that was helping corner me, he was like, "Hey, man, how you feel? You okay?" You know, and he's like, you all right? Are you good?" You know, like you getting ready to give me a pep talk or whatever.
You were freaking out earlier, right?
Yeah. And I was like, dude, I am fantastic. Like, I'm ready to do this. And then I went out and I had an absolutely wonderful match. I got into my game. I hit the takedown I wanted. I was hitting the guard passing system I wanted. Like, I got swept. I was in my sweep game. Felt great. And probably one of the best matches I ever had. I lost. I lost on advantages. And the guy that beat me is a guy named Thiago Silva. 2 weeks after that, he won the Abu Dhabi Black Belt Pro.
Wow.
So I was like, man, I felt really good, you know, going. And he ended up losing that day to a three-time world champion, and he lost on a ref decision, you know.
Wow.
But went out, got my butt handed to me. Like, I mean, but I felt amazing. I also accidentally registered up a weight class. Like, I float near lightweight, but I usually compete middle, and somehow I just registered middle heavy because I can't read Portuguese or English apparently.
I mean, that, you know, I think everybody has that too. You know, I still have yet to compete at blue belt, just simply because you worry about that legitimacy of the belt ranking. I don't so much because I trust my professor in that. But, you know, that had to have made you feel good being a new black belt competing on that big stage and give you some validation behind that belt. Not that you didn't have that validation, not that you didn't trust your professor, but just to be there and to perform. Like you said, you're not outcomes based. You performed well. You performed to what your standard was.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll tell you, that match, like I said, it actually changed my jiu-jitsu a lot for the better, because I got into the game that I wanted to get into, right? I got into like my system, and I was like, you know, move one, he countered, move two, he countered, move three, he countered, move four, he countered, move five, he countered, move six, he countered. I don't have move seven. Like, nobody's ever made it this far. So it forced me to go back and teach, like, okay, so when I got here, this is what this guy did to defend. So now we have to start working on 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you know what I mean? And it was like that with a couple different positions, because I was able to work myself into my game plan, right? Uh-huh. So that's the other part that I would tell guys competing, is I'm huge on going out there with a game plan, right? So when we train, I keep two types of game plans. I keep a training game plan and I keep a competition game plan. My training game plan is me implementing new techniques, new combinations, new systems, new whatever you want to call it, things that I'm not good at or just learning. And I only roll with those, right? So I write them down on a piece of paper, or I use the A-Game app, which is in development. I write them down, and that way I can go and I can access them and kind of look at them in between. Like if I forget, like, oh, you know, what was this new thing I was doing in this position? I can look at it, right? And then competition-wise, my A-game stuff. So when I'm drilling, I'm only going with my best takedowns, my best, you know, my best attacks from mount, my best guard passes, my whatever it may be. And then I also incorporate in bad positions, right? So escape-wise, I'm pretty good at escapes, but I'm always working escapes. You know, you never know when you're going to get in a bad spot, especially at a high level. So I'm always working the stuff I'm very best at and then the worst case scenario stuff. And that's what I go into in a tournament, and I'm trying to force guys into my game and where I want them to be.
Do you have like a way for somebody, like I'm a white belt, Jeff's a blue belt, right? So for a white belt, a lot of techniques are new. So what would the approach be for when you're coaching white belts? Like, do you have a specific approach where a lot of stuff's got to be new, so it's got to be, you know, 90% new stuff and then 10% focus on something, or a lot of escape stuff, or what's your look?
I mean, you can ask a lot of guys and they'll say, well, white belt, you're just learning to survive. And that's fine, but surviving doesn't win tournaments. So if you're a white belt and you want to compete, like you need to understand the point system. I think understanding the point system for a white belt is huge, right? So in jiu-jitsu, basic jiu-jitsu theory is how, this is how I tell people. I say my basic jiu-jitsu theory is threefold. I want to take the fight to the ground. I want to dominate the position where I can effectively attack without being attacked. And I want to end the fight. Okay, so I'm going to end it with a chokehold, arm lock, or leg lock. So that's a self-defense, you know, methodology. And that's also my tournament methodology, right? So I get points for taking the fight to the ground. I get points for passing the guard, improving my position. I get points for sweeping if I'm on bottom. I get them for knee on belly. I get them for mount and rear mount. Those are areas I can finish from. So understand the positions, your five or six basic positions, and know how to kind of hold those and know why you're getting there, right? And I think a big thing white belts do, especially like kids, is they just want to like, blah, 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 like Tasmanian devils, like go crazy. And like, it's like, just slow down. Just like, you can be explosive, but slow down, you know, count to three, count to five, count to six. Cause your mind's probably spinning. Like just count to six before you do anything. Right. So, That's kind of how I look at it. And then obviously, you know, as you're training with guys, you kind of get a better feel for each individual, and you can coach accordingly. But new white belts that want to compete, just look at your positions and figure out the best way to get there. And as you go, like you'll learn those ways.
Yeah. And I also like, you know, that outcomes don't matter approach. And I heard a story once. I don't know if it's true, but they asked Hoyler. Somebody asked Hoyler, "Why do you always smile whenever you were young, after you lost a match?" And he said, "Well, because my dad would pay me $20 if I lost the match. He would only pay me $10 if I won the match."
I think I've heard that same story.
I don't know if it's true or not, but it kind of makes sense from that mindset.
Oh, yeah.
Not be outcomes based, to do the competition, because and we've said it before, you know, the benefit, I don't like competing. I competed in wrestling junior high, high school a lot, and I enjoyed that, but I didn't come into jiu-jitsu to compete. That's not what I do it for. I do it because I really like to do it. I like the self-defense aspect. I like the health aspect. But the part of the competition that I do really like is the training going up to the competition, because it makes me so much better. Because I also, you know, I am a very competitive person. And if I don't feel like in my heart of hearts that I can win that tournament, whether I can or not, you know, doesn't matter. But if I don't feel that I can, then I'm not going to do well. And that's what that preparation and training coming up to the match really gives you. and it really brings up the level of your jiu-jitsu. So that's why, you know, any audience members out there who you know, maybe don't want to compete, I would urge them, I'm going to do at least two competitions a year. You know, it's not, that's not really an active competitive level, but it's enough for me that I feel like I'm going to stretch myself in that manner. And so I would urge those out there who don't think about competition to maybe at least try it once a year, twice a year, whatever the competition schedule may be.
Yeah, for sure. And I think AJ was talking about it before, like no matter what your goals with jiu-jitsu are, like competing will help you achieve them. You know, if I have guys that are like, oh, I just wanted it for self-defense. And it's like, great, go compete and let this person you don't know try to rip your head off and feel that anxiety, right? Feel that pressure. You know, I've got an old friend of mine. He was like, well, like he lost every match he ever had. He's like, I hate competing. It makes me sick. I get horrible. And I'm like, he's like, but in a street fight, I'm like, but in a street fight, you're going to pee your pants, you know, that's the butt in a street fight. You're going to pee your pants and get stabbed to death. You know, if you're doing it for weight loss, guess what? You know, we talked about it. You're that training harder, that changing your diet, that performance enhancing behavior is going to modify the way your body looks. It's going to modify the way you feel about yourself and the way your health is. You know, no matter what your goals, like just competing is going to help you get out there and achieve the goals, right? Like something as simple as like, man, I'm having shoulder pain. I need to work out a little bit more. I'm weak. I should squat a little more. Like, well, guess what? Like somebody's going to try to knee bar you or put you in a Kimura and rip it off. Like you better start exercising now. Right. So.
I agree, Jeff. I love who I become leading up to a tournament. You know, like the 6 weeks before a tournament when, like I said, I'm training harder, I'm eating better, I'm doing more recovery. Like that's I really love that part. But with that said, I've never backed away from a tournament because I thought I couldn't win. Masters Worlds last year, I dislocated my shoulder a week before the tournament doing yoga. Yeah, doing yoga. That hear people wow. Crank on my shoulders all the time, and they're
really
fine.
Aggressive yoga.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I was just doing like arm behind my head and dislocated it, and it was out for 6 hours. I knew I was in pain, but I didn't know why. Wow. And I still went and did Masters Worlds. And you know, like just I kept my arms crossed the whole week leading up to competing, so that nobody knew, like while we were there, that I was injured, or you know, like I just tried to be like, oh hey, you know. But I still went out and did it because I knew that I could learn from it either way. Like even if I, you know, and who knows, I might pull off something. And then after that, for 6 weeks, I just like held my gi and rolled. So like I just didn't use my right arm for 6 weeks of training. And it made my jiu-jitsu so much better because I had to learn how to use the rest of my body. You know, I had to learn different ways. And I was submitting people with just one arm. And so, like, I'm big on if you can find a way to still be on the mat when you're injured, you know, find the way. Because, one, it keeps you in the habit. But, you know, James hurt his knee a million years ago, and that's what made his leche guard so good.
Yeah. So,
Don't quit because you're injured either. So
I think that's a common thing, though. You see so many people who are really good at jiu-jitsu. They formed their games from injuries that they might have possibly had.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you guys know it, but Brian Freeman is an adaptive athlete. He's paraplegic. He's in North Carolina here. He's a purple belt. But, you know, that guy has no use of his lower legs, and he's he likes being mounted. You better watch your wrist whenever you mount him, you know, because
yeah.
So I mean, I think that's
just embarrassing and rude.
Tapping when you have mounts.
Oh, for sure. But it's no regular, you know that. But I just think that's such a good thing to point out is that. Do what you can whenever you are injured. Not too much, obviously. You know, you want to you want to maintain that long-term goal of doing jiu-jitsu for as long as you can, like for myself and others. And so I think that's a really good point. And I also wanted to mention our premier sponsor, because James said documenting your training and your competition game plan. But we have a company called MyBJJ Notes. MyBJJ Notes is what Phil and I used at the Origin Camp, because, you know, there was three sessions a day. We were documenting those things, not only via video. And by the way, for our audience, I haven't said this before, but I've meant to. We have all of the Origin videos posted up on my BJJ campaign podcast YouTube channel. So we Phil was good enough to categorize all of the sessions and kind of a description of the sessions. So we have all those put up on our YouTube channel. But getting back to my BJJ notes, it's a really good thing. It has places for seminars, for tournaments, you know, for your game planning for your tournaments, what you're looking at for rolling. You know, your goals for rolling and what you're working on. And I think, James, that was a really good point, is that you practice that stuff in training that you're not that good at, and try to do that and then take your A game to the competition. Is there anything that Phil or I didn't ask you that you guys wanted to say?
Oh man, I don't know.
I mean, one thing to point out, like, you know, just from a plug standpoint, like James has a lot of instructional videos too. You know, and we've done a lot of instructionals with Christian Woodbansey and Tom McMahon, and there's a lot of high level guys.
Josh Hinger,
yeah. So,
and AJ's got her first DVD out.
I do. I just released my first DVD last week. Yep. Self-defense DVD. I'm very excited about it.
And what's the topic, AJ?
So for mine, it's self-defense. So it's called Dare to Be Fearless, The Everyday Woman's Guide to Self-Defense. So it's not necessarily meant for someone who already does jiu-jitsu. However, you could really start jiu-jitsu from the DVD. Like, we do a lot of stuff from guard and from mount and escaping and that kind of stuff. So super excited about it.
And so you guys' school is in Indiana, and then also
yes.
Fight Hub, right?
Yep. The Fight Hub is where all our instructionals are, and all kinds of different gear and everything. And yeah, we have two schools in Indiana, and then we run the Extreme Grappling Open and everything.
Awesome.
So Fight Hub is fighthub.com. We just want to get this for the listeners, and also we'll
the Fight Hub. Yep.
Fighthub.com. And we'll post a link to that in our show notes on our Facebook page, and also on our webpage that Phil's going to get up this week, tomorrow.
Nice. This week.
Nice.
This week.
This week.
At some point in the future.
And thank you for turning us off to Zoom. I hope this comes out well. I think it will.
Yeah.
I really like it. Now I've got the premium version of it.
If the audio's bad, we'll just do it again.
And, really appreciate that. You know, it meant a lot to us to have you guys on as our first remote guests. And it meant a lot to us, the lessons and the instructions and the way that you freely gave us your time at the Origin Immersion Jiu-Jitsu Camp. You taught us so much, and I urge everyone to go out there and get every instructional that they have, because it's a phenomenal teaching technique.
And if you want a free trial of his instructional one, on the YouTube we have his S-mount series, which was phenomenal. S-mount. Nice. It didn't exist for me before the Origin Camp, and now it's one of my favorite positions to be in. Shout out to Ryan. So yeah, I'll definitely check that out for sure.
Nice. And so with that, we're going to conclude the podcast again. Both James and AJ, really appreciate you guys being here. And to the listeners, the warriors out there, as we call them, if you're not doing something to make yourself better today and every other day, please do.
Nice. That's awesome. Cool. Thanks for having us on, guys.
Thank you. All right, guys. Listen, take care, and we really appreciate it, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right.
I'm about to feed them to the sharks right now. Get them hyped right now. Yeah. You know the ground is up. Yeah. Everybody that trains, you know the game. Yeah. So let's get it. Slap it up, bump it, and roll. Hey. Yeah, that's the way that it goes. Ain't no better way to better yourself in this game. You're feeling the growth. That's time on the mat. We put in the work. Believe it ain't easy, I know. But we train for the love of the game, the love of the art. Now slap it up, bump it, let's roll.